And good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of Talk of the Rock. I will be your host for the next half hour. I'm Jared Griffin, and on today's show, we're going to be doing another news roundup where we invite the newsroom into the studio, a very strange place for you, I'm sure. Not really. And we talk about stories from the past month and look forward to stories coming up kind of on our radar. So joining me today are our KMXT news reporters, Dylan Samard and Kristen Dobroth. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. I'm doing the some folks who might have been listening this morning would have heard me on the morning news shift. I'm covering for Terry.
Oh yeah, how's the morning drive time going?
My heart didn't stop.
Dylan's learning how to be a morning person.
The one man morning zoo crew.
Yeah, it's literally like, you know, the alarm goes off, you like rub the sand out of your eyes, you're like, oh god, I'm just spreading peanut butter on rice cakes, just throwing them down as quickly as I can and trying to get here. It all worked. I was still like I was 5 minutes late, and Terry was like, well, you have to do better than that, Dylan. He's just looking like he's been there.
Oh yeah,
pretty much overnight.
Yes, yeah, like, Terry's yeah, we are thankful for Terry to do this show in the morning. And I should say, if any listeners who have questions for our journalists, just shoot us an email to news@kmxt.org, and I'll kind of be watching just in case any listener questions come in.
Should we give them I mean, obviously, we're not doing call-ins, but they can probably call the station.
Oh, sure,
phone.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. That's true. They could call 486-3181 and talk to Pam or Mike, and we'll try to get your questions on the air.
Yep.
So, all right. So let's talk about some of like your personal big stories, the stories that you were really excited to work on over the past month. We'll start with Kirsten. What sticks out to you?
Well, I have been trying to at least dive into the world of fisheries. I realize that might be a pun that was unintended. But yeah, so
we'll keep it.
Your being lowered in
yes,
a crab pot.
Exactly. I did kind of lower myself into a crab boat at least. So that was fun, and it's been, you know, I think it's really important to everybody who lives here that the news team has kind of an understanding of a big thing that makes the economy tick. So Tanner crab season was back this year, and that was exciting to cover and talk to some people involved with that. Pollock is I did a story about that. And then of course the fisheries disaster declarations, which hit a lot of parts of the state and have been covered by other newsrooms that have also received disaster declarations from the 2020 season. That was for the Gulf of Alaska cod fishery disaster for 2020. So, yeah, that's been coming from Colorado. That is a very big change in my coverage, but I'm enjoying it. I think it's an interesting blend of environment, economy, and politics that I've really enjoyed kind of getting to know as I've been here.
And were these disaster declarations, there a financial component to them? Is there money coming our way?
Yeah, that's the whole story, is that there's not, yes. The short answer is yes. Congress has to allocate funding for it. That has not been allocated yet. It's a long and bureaucratic process. And as I reported, there was a disaster declaration for the 2018, I believe it was, cod season, for Gulf of Alaska. Those people are just starting to see money now from that. So basically it goes through this process where Congress has to allocate funding. People have to apply for the funds. So there's really no time. I spoke to a few people around that story, and currently there's no time estimate on when funding will be made available to people who need it from missing out on the 2020 season. So that will be something that we'll be keeping an eye on and following as it goes along.
It will probably come around when the next disaster declaration is.
yeah. Unfortunately, that's how this one worked out. Yeah. So that's been kind of interesting to follow. And like I said, we weren't the only area that had a disaster declaration. I believe it was 14 fisheries. Mm-hmm. And that was between the years of, I think the earliest one was 2018. Most were in 2020. And there was one for 2021. So a lot of areas of the state struggled with that.
Okay, what about you, Dylan? Your big story that kind of stuck out to you that you did.
Well, I guess as far as the, and again, not a measure of quality, but one that I got to spend a lot of time putting together was one that came out not long after our last meeting in January, a comparison of the Tonga eruption to the Novarupta eruption of the previous century. And that was a lot of fun. I got sort of, I definitely got into the copy for that one. I got the language kind of flowery and bombastic, so to speak, perhaps in relative to the just immense and remarkable power of a volcanic eruption. Certainly that story it's definitely something that I find quite fascinating, and the people who I interviewed about that are in general pretty passionate about. It's always nice because when you call the USGS, it's not like you're getting somebody who knows about earthquakes. You're getting an earthquake nerd and a volcano nerd, and they're so happy to tell you that they're nerds on the subject. They can really get into the weeds, and they're really passionate about it. And I think it's really passionate sources are always something that makes a story really pop a little bit more, so to speak.
And that was a news story about a news story.
Yes, it
which
was.
Is yeah. worth mentioning. The tsunami that wasn't, or that was in some areas, kind of, but wasn't in our area.
Ours was just a few. By the time it got to us, it was just maybe an inch.
Right.
The tide gauge.
Yeah.
Not to mention the sonic boom that was heard in some parts.
And then there
was
the sonic boom. I was in Anchorage at the time, and we didn't hear it up there, but I didn't hear it, but I think there were some other people who heard it up there.
I think anyone who woke up at a weird time of night probably thinks, at least I woke up at a weird time of night that night, and I'd like to think that I heard it, but I probably just woke up because of something weird happening in the neighborhood.
I mean, you never know. It is like a pretty intense pressure wave. I mean, earnestly, it's kind of horrifying, like, how much energy is released in a volcanic eruption, because if you think about it, like, it would be totally possible for you to hear about the eruption, read about it on the internet, like, have a story come out, like, an hour later or something, and then go to bed, get, like, 5 hours of sleep, and then wake up in the middle of the night and then hear the sonic boom from the explosion that you read about, like,
right,
4 hours
it's
earlier.
Wild.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's
meantime,
totally
wondering
crazy.
What it was.
Right.
So as journalists, you know, Kirsten, you mentioned you're from Colorado, not a big fishery state, and of course, Dylan, I don't think you would. I don't think that you would recognize label yourself as an earthquake or volcano expert. So, what is it like for journalists to reach out and find experts? And you kind of have to become almost an instant expert on some things.
Yeah, you have to read a lot. And honestly, a lot of it is just asking really baseline questions, because you're reporting it to some people that know a lot about what they're hearing. But one of the best editors I've ever had always told me that assume your reader knows nothing. And that's also who we're reporting for, is somebody that doesn't know anything about earthquakes or know anything about fisheries. So starting with the baseline and then kind of working your way up into more complicated questions and follow up, I think.
Yeah, I guess the most important thing is just to echo that. A lot of the times the best reporting that you can do is when you come in with as few assumptions as possible, where you come in and you basically ask like questions that are so basic. Sometimes you might have like an idea for a story and you make the calls and they tell you, oh, actually it doesn't work like that, and that's kind of a shock. But then you might hear something completely different, then you go, oh, okay, well, this is the story because this is happening in comparison to this thing that I thought was happening. As far as earthquakes go in particular, I fortunately am from the Seattle area. I've been through some, before I even got here, when I was like a little kid, I forget, but they had like a really, really big quake in the Seattle area when I was just a youngster. Not that this gives me any sort of background on earthquakes, but I know a little bit about, like, yeah, we had like earthquake drills in school growing up, right? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So they would be like, you need to like get under the desk. Whereas in Arizona, I assume they don't have any earthquake drills whatsoever because they really don't have any. I did feel one earthquake though in Arizona.
What's the name of that really big dust storm?
Haboobs.
Haboobs, yeah. Do they have
Haboobs?
Haboob drills?
They don't have Haboob drills. They're actually very scary. So Haboobs, if you're like out on the freeway, you legally have to like keep moving. You can't just like pull over. So if you're on the freeway, and I'm not even kidding, you may not be able to see past you might not be able to see like where your license plate is mounted ahead of your car. The visibility is that bad. You have to keep moving. You cannot pull over. You can't use lights because the lights will just like, it's like in the worst fog, right? You turn the lights on, you'll see less. So you basically mm-hmm. have to move in the dark. If it happens at night, I mean, you're basically praying the whole way.
It's terrifying.
Well, the other thing is that you can get this horrifying disease called Valley Fever. There's like a fungus that's in it, and it can give give you like adult asthma if you like hang out in Habub for too long. It
sounds like the start of a horror movie.
It does, right?
there is, with all that said, there is nothing more beautiful or awe-inspiring than seeing a wall of dust that is totally, you just can't see through it, and mm-hmm. it seems to be like miles high. There's nothing quite so beautiful as seeing something like that bearing down on you, though it'll put the fear in you.
So and this is a question based off something that Dylan said, and we didn't really prep for this question, but if something comes to mind, was there a story that you covered or maybe that you heard about, statewide, that really kind of questioned your assumptions about what you were bringing to the topic or the issue? And maybe we can come back to that if you need time to think about it a little bit. This one's coming from left field, but
I'm trying to think of so Jacob Resnick posted something about this. It was from a blogger. I would name drop them if I remembered the name, but it was it just came out today, so I guess I can provide a very current example. He mentioned a story where reporters had kind of regurgitated a press release from NTSB about a plane crash, but didn't look up like the tail number, and further from that, the guy who was in the crash just got out of the plane and walked away and never told anyone he crashed. So there are all these search parties out looking for him. And the guy's like, no, I'm home. Like, I just walked home after I crashed my plane. And they're like, well, why didn't you call us? He's like, I need to call you? Like,
oh, interesting. I need to find that. What an interesting story.
I'll link it to you. Link it to you. But yeah, it was just sort of an example of, as a reporter, you cannot just take press releases. And I guess an example I can give is that, like, I'll get press releases and it'll be like, such and such thing happened, and this happened here and here at this time, and then there will be like a quote at the end of that from somebody. We're, in general, to my understanding, and this is certainly a rule I followed while I've been here, not supposed to take any of those quotes unless there's absolutely no other way to get like any sort of information out of those people. So, for example, like, something will happen and then they'll quote somebody. We're not supposed to use quotes that are given to us. If we're not talking to the person, then we can't be that. We can't be like, I mean.
Unless you are reporting it back to the whatever the reporting body is or something
right,
like
right,
that.
Right, right, right. So there are just certain, like, shall we say, safeguards in the process that just make sure that you're getting the best quality information to people.
So for people writing press releases and sending them, if they include quotes, just be prepared to get a call from...
Yes, we're calling you anyways.
Yeah,
You haven't done the work for us.
Yeah, I guess just moving to Alaska, I think I've had an open mind about everything. And just to kind of echo what Dylan had said, I think the biggest thing about reporting is going into a story being very objective. I try to go in whenever I'm asking questions of somebody with no preconceived notions, which I know as human beings is hard, but that's literally my job as a reporter, is to be as objective as possible. So I think that just moving to a new place, I think that's kind of what I've been trying to do as I approach any story. And it's been interesting to see, you know, how different areas, just their coverage and what's important to different areas of the state and how that compares to what's happening here in Kodiak.
If we, kind of looking at the social media engagement, at some of our more popular stories over the past month, one of them has to be, I think this was Dylan's story on the school district struggling to fill staff positions.
Right.
Got a lot of traffic. What was it like covering? It's not necessarily an uplifting story about the school district, but
no. I guess one thing I'll say about that is that fortunately the school board here is pretty candid about the problems that they're having. So they could certainly have made it a lot perhaps I'll say more challenging to have reported that story out by, you know, not speaking to me perhaps, but they're pretty frank about the issues. It's certainly something that people are very passionate about. I mean, I think people in general are appreciative that it's really, really hard to be a teacher. And with that said, there it seems like the school has not a whole lot of options as far as making it a more attractive insofar as like adding monetary incentive. That's not the sort of thing where they can just broadly raise the pay scale. And I think people are particularly appreciative because, I mean, we have pretty remarkably high interest rates, right? Inflation rates. Inflation is pretty high right now. I know people are seeing it at the grocery store, and people are certainly seeing it in gas prices. I think it's something that people can appreciate, that a dollar isn't stretching as far quite as it used to.
I think it's worth pointing out too, on top of that, that hiring and teacher retention has been an issue for a long time. I think the pandemic has, you know, I think a lot of people are having their moment of reevaluating what they want to do and what struggles they've been having. And I think it's, you know, coming from Colorado, particularly in rural areas of the mountains, teacher retention and hiring people for a fair wage has been very difficult. I think within the same few days that you ran that story, Alaska Public Media's economic report was also about teacher retention. So it's something that's happening everywhere. But I think the pandemic, it's just one of those things that the pandemic has really highlighted, I guess.
And we're going to report on this more substantially later on, but the school district made a key hire.
Yes.
This morning.
They filled their superintendent position, which I know was current superintendent Larry Ledoux was telling me was one of his highest priorities right now as far as make his staff roles that he had to fill. So I guess with that done, he's at least secure knowing that his position is going to be filled. So I would imagine he's going to be focusing on filling some of those other administrative positions. Because right now, I believe they're out two principals, I want to say, for an elementary school, in addition to
the high school, too.
Yeah, yes. The high school. I know they're having double-digit issues with teachers, double-digit issues with substitute teachers. They certainly have their work cut out for them in that regard.
Also, piggybacking on that again with nationwide coverage, I don't know if you guys saw the NPR story that in New Mexico, National Guard members are filling in for as substitute teachers, which I think is very telling of the collective struggles that school districts are having right now.
In a degree, it's actually quite remarkable that they let it. I mean, that is so extreme. I mean, I have no doubt that, like, you know,
guess they're state employees who needed some work.
I guess very telling of how short they were on staff.
And one of your stories, Kirsten, that got, I think, went statewide was the story about the Gulf of Alaska fishermen. Their stories are heading to the Library of Congress.
Yes.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
How did you get on that?
Okay, I have to say, my insight into that, our own Terry Haynes was interviewed as part of that project and told me about it. And so I reached out to the fisherman. But yeah, he's got a really interesting story. He's moved to Kachemak Bay, was it in the 90s, and fished there for a while, and has gone to school for anthropology and has this interest in oral histories. And he was one of six people who got this grant to collect stories from tradespeople across the country. And I think I said in my story, it will be the first stories from Alaska that are going to the Library of Congress as part of this project. So pretty cool. And he's traveling around the state. He was in Kodiak. I think he said he's going to be coming back to Kodiak perhaps in March.
This is
Josh Wisniewski.
Wisniewski.
Yep.
At first, I thought you were talking about Terry. I'm like, wait, no, can't be
right. No, no,
no. Yeah, that's what happened when he
yeah,
left.
Yeah, no, Terry was one of several Kodiak fishermen who was interviewed
really
for
cool.
it. Yeah.
That's pretty exciting. There is another story that I'd like to bring up on the topic of lighter-hearted coverage. The Coast Guard encountering a totally unmanned vessel in Dry Spruce Bay. That was a really, because as soon as
we came up with all sorts of theories about how that boat ended there. Did we ever find out?
I don't know. Honestly, my guess would be that somebody decided to do like some sort of overnight trip. Like they moored up and took a Zodiac out to a Zodiac or a skiff out to like an island to like hunt or fish in the river or something. And then the mooring line broke loose. Or, I mean, they may have just been tied up at the dock. We know the mooring line broke and we know that no one was aboard probably when that happened. Hopefully.
right.
I guess like for me, like as soon as, the first thing I heard about that is like, okay, if you're on a boat, right, and you're traversing like this kind of remote area and it's the middle of the night and you've got like your searchlight on, and then suddenly you see a boat, like no lights on, engine off, there's nobody aboard. Horror movie stuff. Get away from there.
It's our second reference it to is. A horror movie oh, no. in this show.
It's we're in the middle of winter, so that's what we're
that's where our minds are going.
Another, you know, really big community story was the passing of Mayor Carolyn Floyd.
Yes.
And
yes.
Kirsten, you covered. Did you cover this one?
We both kind of did. I mean, I jumped on something that day, but Dylan did a really nice Talk of the Rock episode.
I think maybe the most viewed online of all of the Talk of the Rocks I've ever done.
I think so. It's I looked at the numbers really quickly, and that one was a big spike. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just goes to show that people were really, really appreciative of the work that she had done for in this community. And certainly I had a lovely cast of characters to give what I hope is a fitting tribute.
And then before moving on to, I guess, our next big, beat is, COVID.
COVID.
What's how's it? It's been a month, and it was a heck of a month since we last did our roundup. And I think when we last did our roundup, Omicron was just on the way up, and now we're on the other side of it. It looks like, you know,
hopefully,
on the way down.
I won't name names, but I guess we had our first case of COVID within the newsroom.
Oh. Well, I mean, I guess so, technically, sure.
We're all okay.
We're all okay.
Everyone's fine.
Yeah.
Everyone's okay. We're all fine. Yeah, it's I'm just glad that my head's still in the game, because this has definitely felt like the story that never ends, you know?
It is the story that never ends. It hasn't ended for almost 2 years now. It's wild that we're coming up on 2 years.
Right.
Yeah, that is truly wild.
I was like still in college, and that feels like a century ago. And yeah, it's certainly the Omicron variant wave has been totally different. It's been on a much slower decline than past variants of the virus, and of course it went up just so incredibly quickly. And certainly we've seen more deaths in the community because of it as well, which is a real tragedy. But I guess another thing that makes it different is that as far as the EOC using mitigation tools like a mask mandate, for example, or other things, those kind of were off the table from the jump, it seems like. So it seems to be decreasing now. It's decreasing pretty slowly, but it seems like it's certainly nowhere near like the 800 case high.
It'll go down, and then it kind of ticks back up, and then goes down. And
right, but when's the next variant, you know?
I don't know. We need to have another Doc of the Rock.
And other things to that effect. I think they just said that like the boosters are only effective for about like 4 months.
Which
you know, I get the flu shot every year. Does this mean that I need to get 3 COVID booster shots every year?
Oh goodness!
I think we're waiting for. Yeah, I think there's just to your statement about no mandates or anything. I think the collective fatigue is definitely. It's like I said, it's hard to believe that this has been almost 2 years that we've been dealing with this and still reporting on it.
Yep.
Let's see. I'm kind of looking down at like the legislative rundown, and there are some things going on with the ferries, with the Alaska Marine Highway System. And Kirsten, you've been covering what's been going on with the Tusty and the Kennecott.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, the Kennecott, I had reported there's a delay. They delayed that service. The Department of Transportation said that, you know, global supply chains had created a problem with getting its repairs done on a timely basis. So that had been pushed back. It's not supposed to return to Kodiak till late April. And then the Testy's also been pushed back. And, you know, they're planning to replace that, but that's still years out till that new vessel will be in service. The Alaska Marine Highway Operating Board, that just had its first meeting last week. I believe it was Friday. Speaker Stutes, Louise Stutes from Kodiak, was one of the people who helped push legislation through to get that board put together and made appointments to it along with the governor. So that's kind of with that board kind of has the goal of creating short-term and long-term fixes to the Alaska Marine Highway System. So very new, but it will be interesting to see how that works and plays out.
And Dylan, what have you been kind of following up on with the legislative session?
There are two things I'm looking at right now. One is the legislative citations. I need to do some more reporting on that. I don't know if those have gone into effect just yet. The other thing was, of course, the board that they're hoping to put together on invasive species. Mm-hmm. My background in Arizona was environmental reporting. I've been reporting on invasive species for a long time, and it's an issue that I find personally very interesting because it's sort of you look at the problem from the outside and you're like, oh, so this is you're trying to keep sand from draining out of the bottom of an hourglass with your mind. It's impossible, mm-hmm. right? You simply can't win the fight. And then you talk to the people who are involved in it and they're like, well, you know, we will bear this out as long as we can. We will do everything we can to prevent these creatures from spreading and doing more damage and harm. I think there's something pretty remarkable about that. It's sort of a, I just think it's very cool. Scientifically, it's a very interesting problem. Like suddenly you could have a creature that's never been in an area before. And ecosystems, funnily enough, are pretty fine-tuned things. And when you introduce something that really shakes it up, you know, changes the equation, so to speak, mm-hmm. It really throws them out of whack. Invasive species are really interesting. And the incredible threat that they can pose to fisheries, for example, like with the crayfish and in the buskin.
Oh, yeah. Well, I got the signal. We got about 1 minute left. So let's look to the future just a little bit. What other stories do you see kind of coming down the pike or stories that you're contracting? I see.
Is it too early for me to talk about my feature?
I mean, you just brought it up.
You can tease it.
Okay, sure.
Elevator pitch.
Yes, I have a very interesting feature coming out soon talking about Coast Guard icebreakers and whether or not any of those could ever end up in Kodiak.
Cool.
That's something I'm definitely looking forward to. I am going to follow up on those legislature stories, and I'll pass to Kirsten because I know we don't have much time.
I will give very quick, working on something about local agriculture. There's going to be a launch at the Kodiak Spaceport in the near future. Mm-hmm. Keeping an eye on fisheries. We have Comfish next month.
Yes.
That will be interesting. We're working out coverage on that. So lots to come.
Oh yes. Comfish is going to be big.
Mm-hmm.
back in person. So that'll be nice. And there's some other things in the legislature that we're keeping an eye on. Tax incentives for seafood and things having to do with boat licenses and boating safety education. There's bills with civics education and native governance education, which look really interesting. There was one more. But maybe that was it. Maybe those were the ones that were. Oh, the state tribe compact schools is a very interesting issue that we'll also be taking a look at. Okay, well, I think that just about does it for us here at Talk of the Rock. Thanks again to Dylan and Kirsten for joining me in the studio today as we did a news roundup of the past month. And so I look forward to doing this. I guess it'll be around like spring break next time we do this.
Yep.
We'll be ready.
Thanks, Jared.
I don't know. It'll be spring break. I may not be ready.